Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast, where you learn about advanced wealth building strategies from real estate investing to creating massive ROI and secure retirement profits. So pour yourself a cup of coffee, grab a notepad, and lean in. Because Big Mike has got the mic, starting now.
Welcome to the Big Mike Fun Podcast. I'm the Big Mike.
Mike Zlatnik, and today it is my pleasure and a privilege to welcome Matt Middendorf. Hey, Matt.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Thanks for coming on a podcast. It's great to have you. And this is going to be a different episode. We talk a little bit about real estate. We talk about investing. And this is going to be very different for our audience. We'll talk about variable compensation, employee stock option plans. And you're a resident expert. You're a consultant in the field of helping companies put together an ESOP, employee stock option plan, and similar. So welcome. And you hail us from the cold Wisconsin. How's the weather? And tell us a little bit about you before we get going.
Sure. First of all, I have to say that you look exactly like I would expect somebody to be a Big Mike to be. So I want to get that out there right away. We can start there. As far as the beauty of Wisconsin, it is a gorgeous time of year. And I got to admit, go Bills, by the way, Bills Mafia. We don't even want to talk about last weekend. We can forget about the Packer game. But, there's not enough snow. We need more snow. If I'm going to live in the tundra, I want snow. And I've only got maybe this much on the ground. I should have this much. So what do you do, right?
I got to give you a hug. I'm in the same camp. I love snow, actually. And, yes, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. I used to live upstate New York. And last weekend was rough for the Packers and the Bills made it through. And, that's life. But one thing we can all complain about is the weather. That's one universally loved or hated. And depending on who you are, there isn't harm about complaining, not having enough snow, or somebody else going to say, you got to be crazy. Not enough snow. You guys are crazy. Well, yeah. The weather is a politically, universally safe place to talk about. So we'll move on.
That's why I live here, just so I have something to talk about. If I lived in some place like Arizona or Florida, man, hey, it's 70 degrees again today. What do you do, right? So,
well, you live here for all four seasons. Wisconsin or upstate New York has both the cold and the hot, and we'll take it with we'll take the beauty of each season as it comes.
Well said.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about ESOPs.
Yep. So give us an overview. Stock ownership plans, yep.
Yeah, what is an ESOP? What kind of companies use it? Folks could be participant in a plan. They could be part of the executive team who puts the plan together. So let's just talk a little bit about what the purpose, what these plans do, what's the objective of these plans, and just let's start with the basics.
Yeah, so the short of ESOP is, if you're a business owner and you're trying to figure out what's next for your business, what that transition looks like, it could be a strategic transition out of the business, right? Over 3-5+ years. It could be that you're looking for a business model where you want to be able to hire and retain better talent, right? That's where employee stock ownership plans or ESOP come into place. And a lot of that has to do with that business transition, right? And if you've invested yourself in this business, if you've taken the risk of starting a business and growing it over years, and you want to leave, the challenges that a lot of business owners face aren't about how much money they're going to make, right? If you're to the point where you're thinking about exit, you've built a business that's sellable, what a lot of people are thinking about is control. Right? They may not be ready to step away, but they want to start pulling liquidity out of the business. They're thinking about, as somebody who has owned a business and sold a business, I can tell you that a large part of my identity was wrapped up in being a business owner in this thing that I had built and nurtured through good times and bad. But a lot of business owners, besides thinking about control and identity, are also thinking about legacy. Thinking about the people that work for them, that help them build this, thinking about the communities that they're in, that they've supported and invested in. What does that legacy look like? And the only way to exit a business and maintain control, maintain your identity as a business owner, and control your legacy with your employees and your community is through employee ownership. Employee stock ownership plans are ESOPs specifically, because you don't have to give up any of those things like you do when you're selling to, let's say, a third party or private equity.
Yeah, that's very interesting. It's a different angle on stepping away from the business is to attract right leadership. And attracting great people, you have to reward them for their great work.
Yes.
And I remember from the days, you know, I've been in real estate now for, you know, many years now. But before that, I spent a career in high tech. I spent 15-year career in high tech. And I saw these ESOP plans with restricted stock and stock options being a very common currency to attract leadership, to attract even rank-and-file employees.
Well, and I do want to differentiate, right? ESOP, employee stock ownership plans, is different than stock options. So I just want to be clear about that. So in an ESOP transaction, what actually happens is a trust is created, an ESOP trust. The trust is overseen by a trustee. And that trust buys the company from a seller, from the business owner. Now, it could be a piece of the company. It could be all of the company. But that trust actually owns the company to the extent that it's sold. But the beauty of it is that trustee that oversees the trust represents the employees, is not involved in the day-to-day of the company. So when we talk about maintaining control, maintaining identity as a business owner, you don't have to give that up because you still use the people who run the company before the transaction run the company after.
Understood. So it's used as a tool to give ownership through a trust rather than direct ownership in terms of shares, non-voting shares in a matter of
speaking. Yeah. So let me give you an example of where that can come into play, for example, from a longer term. I have one of my clients that actually sold their company to an ESOP, 100% of it. And there were four owners and they were in their 40s. They weren't retiring. They weren't going anywhere. As a matter of fact, they're going to stay with the company for 10 to 15 years. But they used ESOP as a tool to pull liquidity out of the company, right? And they went and did other things with the money. They made other investments, like, for example, say real estate, which I know is part of their portfolio now because of that transaction. So they still run it. They still profit from it. They're actually part of the ESOP. They still get shares as part of the ownership, employee stock ownership plan. But they themselves do not have the risk as individual owners.
Yeah, understood. It's here an example would be it's a transfer of ownership to that ESOP plan trust or partial ownership or partial. What I remember years ago, a certain portion of the equity was, and again, this is high tech days, was allocated to the employees. So you typically have private equity comes in or venture capital that buys a portion of the company, and then the founding members or the founding employees are still there. Some of them leave, some of them stay, but then 10, 20, 30% of the company, depending on the company, was allocated to the employee pool. And it's different. The option pools are different from the ESOP. So let's just kind of cover the difference between kind of an option plan versus an actual ESOP owning piece of the company, where I'm sure these plans could be set up with appropriate vesting. So as people join the company, they could be given a certain percent ownership, but they have to vest over some amount of time. Just curious, give us a little color. How this works practically with any business that wants to go through this transition where the founders can exit the business or be involved less with the business, maybe retain some level of control in the direction, but the employees are running the company. Just give us an example of how a company would transact.
Yeah, so one of the biggest things to know about this is that the employees of an ESOP company are beneficiary owners. Right? They aren't direct owners. So they don't have voting rights. They don't get to change the name. They don't get to hire and fire people. And that is one thing I want to make sure people come away understanding. But really what it comes down to through this is that an ESOP is a qualified retirement plan, right? That's one of the big features of an ESOP, is that it's a qualified retirement plan. So there are tax benefits to the sellers through that process. There are tax benefits to the company as a result of that. And again, it gives the employees a retirement plan that they don't have to put their own money into. They're committing to the success. They're giving their time, talent, and expertise to the company. The company grows. The company is more successful. The share price increases, and their value of their beneficiary shares increase over time. Right.
So on this topic, thank you for that clarification. I didn't remember whether ESOP was a qualified plan or non-qualified.
Yeah.
So it is a qualified plan versus just a stock option, which has is a non-qualified type of ownership. Yep. So an ESOP would own piece of the company, or you know, maybe the entire company. Yep. So I assume the company, when it, ESOP owns it, would have to be a C corp. Otherwise, how do they deal with the UBIT? Because in generally speaking, a retirement plan that owns an operating company, whether it's like a McDonald's franchise or any, you know, a business, the government still wants that tax. They want it through a C corp tax, or they want it through UBIT tax. I'm just curious, how does that work? At least if you
so, do we want to blow your listeners' minds right now, or do we want to drum roll that and save it? We should probably clarify
the short version of it.
Yeah, before I just want to warn everybody, pull over really quick if you're driving, because this is kind of a big deal and I don't want you to swerve off the road. So what's really, really cool about employee ownership and ESOPs is, because they're a qualified retirement plan, if the company is 100% employee owned, you can be a C or an S corp. But for this example, if you're an S corp and you're 100% employee owned, you no longer pay federal taxes. And in 46 out of 50 states, the company no longer pays their state taxes either. So those K-1s that used to go to the owners now go to the ESOP, and the ESOP doesn't have to pay that tax bill.
So if I heard you correctly, you're saying that an ESOP plan can own the company. The company could be an operating company generating profit, right? So it's not a high tax. It's losing money. For that, it doesn't make any difference, right?
Yeah, if you're losing money, it doesn't make sense. It's got to be a sellable company, right?
Yeah, it's got to be could be a sellable company that loses money, right? A high tech, you're just building up user base, right? And but in a practical sense, an ESOP can own a real estate, operating company, or could be a tire shop, or could be anything, right? Any kind of business, a manufacturing mm-hmm. facility. And it can produce profits and not pay taxes in the form of either C corp taxes. So essentially, you're going to an S corp, which is a pass through. Yeah. That is fascinating. I never heard of it. I thought the moment the qualified plan comes in and starts owning anything operating, this is the wonderful world of UBIT kicks in, because the IRS wants that tax either through a C corp or through UBIT. They still want a tax.
Yep.
How does it work? I'm just curious. How is it even possible that this can function like this?
Yeah. So, you can count on the IRS to get their piece of it, right? And the way that happens is through the employees as they build balances in their ESOP shares. So take, for example, Publix is a very, very well-known ESOP. The Publix grocery store chain in the southeastern United States, they're employee-owned. And you hear stories all the time about people who were cashiers there, who worked there for 20, 30 years, and they walk away multimillionaires through the ESOP. Now, what's amazing about that then is that as they start pulling money out of that qualified retirement plan to retire, Uncle Sam does charge income tax. And that's where Uncle Sam,
right? On distributions from retirement.
On the distributions as they start cashing in on that retirement plan. Yep. So Uncle Sam gets their money in the end through the individuals as they're pulling money out of the retirement plan. And I think ideally, that allows the businesses to it's a redistribution of wealth strategy, right? The business owners profit from the business they built as they sell it to the ESOP. The company is better off through the process. The employees are better off through the process, right? Building these balances. And lo and behold, Uncle Sam still gets its share later.
So just to clarify, can ESOP be traditional and Roth, or it can only be a traditional plan? In other words, mm-hmm. the distributions typically, like you said, if an ESEP owns a company and then the distributions as part of the plan, then those distributions are subject to the tax taxes, right? Can an ESEP be a Roth, like a Roth?
That is actually a growing option for individuals to choose a Roth. The work through a Roth type where you pay the tax up front versus later upon distribution.
So the ownership.
Now, I want to be clear, it's rare. Most people don't, but that is something that is a growing option that's becoming more and more available.
Like any other qualified plan, there may be a conversion even option for employees, and then they pay tax on the conversion, right? So if they have, you know, build up an equity stake of $100,000 and then they want to convert to a Roth, the plan can be designed to have a traditional component and a Roth component. Is that accurate?
To an extent, yes. And you can also actually diversify later on too. Once you hit a certain age and a certain point in the plan, you can start to actually diversify out of just the company shares.
Wow, that's very powerful. I mean, what you described is a very powerful tool people can.
Mm-hmm.
And what about prohibited party transaction? That's one thing that I've always been worried about with these retirement plans, where employees or key managers or key people are not allowed to invest in their own business. Their retirement money is not supposed to be like the primary disqualified party that you can do business with. So how does that function? How does it work? How can a retirement plan that benefits employees of the company, including some key employees, managers of the company, be as effectively an owner of the same company?
So here's the beautiful part of it. Again, if the company is 100% employee owned, the employees aren't putting their own money into it. They're not making their own financial investment into the ESOP. Their investment comes in the form of time and talent and expertise to grow the company, to help it be more successful, to help it to be more profitable, which increases the share price that comes back to them, right? So I think that's where that prohibitive investment piece gets around it, is they are putting their own money into it. So they're buying in. They're being awarded beneficiary shares that they then influence through their performance.
Yeah, I was just, and maybe you know this better. I was, and this is brand new area for me. So I don't know, like you said, public.
Oh, I can tell your mind's working and you're going, okay, wait a minute. Go for it.
I'm pretty familiar with self-directed IRAs and 401ks, but I'm not familiar with an ESOP owning a part of the company. So it's actually a very powerful way to, you know, to basically give employees a critical stake in the company. But I understand the important component of that is that they are not directly owning shares. It's not a voting block. It's more of a passive ownership. Yep. So they have to play along. Maybe that kind of removes the possibility of the disqualification through management decisions goes away, because a trustee runs the whole thing, not employees. So it's not designed. Well, that's the reason. It's not a prohibited transaction because of that.
The trustee doesn't run the company, right? The trustee just runs the trust.
To the benefits of the employees.
Yeah, to the benefit of the employees, right? That's their fiduciary responsibility. The company is still run by the people that are set up to run it every day.
Yeah, understood. It's just that whole component. One is the, mm-hmm. I think I can understand the plan. And I probably need to speak a little more with CPA. But again, if I large grocer like Publix is run majority owned or maybe entirely owned by employees through an ESOP, that's a very fascinating thing. Yeah. So how do people make this decision? What drives them to make a decision? Is this worth to try to use an ESOP to set it up for forward basis, where I guess the existing owners would sell the company or portion of the company into a plan? Where does the money come to actually finance the purchase? Is this a sell a carry? Owners basically sell it, and then the plan owns kind of have to pay off these loans over time? I'm just curious.
Yeah, so this would be the part where ESOPs die for everybody, right? It's not perfect. There's always something about it. And one of the components of this is almost everybody who sells their company to an ESOP gets paid out over time, right? So that's part of this is
It's an installment sale or some of sort.
Yeah, so whether it's seller financed or there's or a combination of bank and seller financing, there's almost always a component of seller financing that goes along with it. Now, they earn interest, percent and a half above the going rate, right? So it's not like it's not profitable for them to do so, but for some people, they want to sell their business and do this, right? Now, let's be fair, that doesn't even happen in private equity transactions anymore. There's always an earnout, there's always a catch. You don't get your money up front there either, like you used to, most of the time. But that is one thing about ESOP that some people are uncomfortable with, is they want to exit now. They don't want to stay on in a governance capacity on the board and keep their pulse on the company for 5 to 7 to 10 years, whatever it is that ends up taking. But, you know, just to give you an example, I just actually closed a transaction on 12/31 with a company in the construction industry, which is the third largest niche of ESOP behind professional services and manufacturing. Fourth is financial services, by the way, banking, which is interesting. But, you know, this construction company had received a lot of offers from strategic buyers, from private equity, and every time they got one of those offers, they looked at it and they said, man, I can't look at myself in the mirror if I do this, because I know what's going to happen to the people that got me here. Right. And when they got the terms, when they went through the due diligence on that several times with several different parties, they finally said, you know what, their advisor, their broker finally said, you should take a look at ESOP, right? And let me connect you to somebody that I know and trust that can at least do some education on this and explain it. And that's the direction they chose. Like I said, they closed on 12/31. They made just as much money as if they had sold to one of those other offers. Their company is better off. And they can look at themselves in the mirror and know that they did the right thing for the people that got them. It's a pretty powerful tool.
Yeah, and the key conditions and the key, just from what I heard from you, the key requirements is really transferring the ownership to the employees rather than external parties that could completely, you know, break up the company, chop it up, merge with somebody mm-hmm. else, and do whatever else they want to do.
Well, let's be honest with that. That's a lot of time what happens, right? If private equity buys, and I'm not villainizing private equity, they have a role, right? But the truth of it is 3 to 5 years, a lot of those businesses are gone. I'm working with a client. Literally, I have a meeting with him this afternoon to decide if he's going to move forward from the studying it to the doing it step. And he sold his company to private equity. Private equity ran it into the ground. He bought it back for pennies on the dollar, built it back up again. And now he's doing it what he believes to be the right way and selling it to an ESOP.
And I understand from that perspective that it's a loss of control, loss of decisions. And at that point, you know, it's a purely monetary type of event. Mm-hmm. But with ESOP, so if the Publix is completely owned by an ESOP, 100%. So who makes the decision? So ESOP is the board, is effectively the, is this composed of yep. both key employees or how does that work? Who is yes. the board at that point?
So again, the day-to-day operations of the company continue with the people who ran the company. Now you're right though, there is a governance piece. So let me give you the example of this company that we just closed on 12/31. Within 12 months, they're going to have to set up a 3-person board, two of which are the current sellers, right? Because they're getting paid out over the next 5 to 7 years, both from the bank lending that they're borrowing as well as the seller note. And they want to stay on top of the company. And then there's going to be one independent member that they choose. Now, I want to be clear, they do have to get that independent member approved by the trustee, but really what they're doing is confirming that they're independent. Right? Somebody that hasn't done business with them, somebody that's not related to them or worked with them in the last 12 to 24 months, depending on what's negotiated, they pick the person who's the independent member. So governance is a huge part of any successful business anyway. It should be something that most businesses have. And setting strategic direction so the day-to-day operations have a path, right? And both of those stay in control of the people who are in control of it at the time of sale.
Yeah, that's very powerful. It is, mm-hmm. in fact, for any company, right? It's setting up an independent board, or at least, you know, having some insiders and some outsiders
yeah.
that both technically and independent. And at the end of the day, they there's a, you know, formal requirement, like you said, for an independent. So how do companies go to this decision, no matter what industry? Mm-hmm. At which point in the conversation, at which point people call you and say, hey, I might need a little bit of help here trying to figure out if this is the right path forward versus a private equity? Is this a consideration to be done when they're thinking to exit, or this is something that gets set up way, way earlier for a potential exit later?
The answer is yes. We've hit all the scenarios, right? We've had people who at the close of the sale are out of their business and moving on. We have people that are, like I said, the client I mentioned is staying in for 10 to 15 years. Both of those are legitimate and viable scenarios to transition to an ESOP. So here's the cool thing is if somebody is genuinely curious about this, there's a few different steps that you go through before you even have to decide if ESOP is it. And the first thing is education, right? It's listening to conversations like this, learning a little bit about it. And then you reach out to somebody, whether it's me or somebody else who can dig deeper and understand what your goals are in your specific situation. What are you trying to accomplish for yourself, your business, and your employees, right? And does ESOP fit that? And at that point, you can decide like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. You do something called a feasibility study. So you aren't necessarily making the first decision about whether or not you want ESOP. You're making the first decision to decide whether or not you want to formally explore that it works for you. Right? So a feasibility study is evaluation. How much is your company actually worth? A feasibility study is checking out the impact on the sellers, meaning what's their return? How much money are they going to make? Right? It's laying that out. It's showing the impact on the company, both in the tax savings and in the costs of being an ESOP, right? And then a lot of sellers really like to see the impact on their employees. How much money are they going to make? I just delivered a study last week where their employees after 10 years are going to have $860,000 for the average employee in their ESOP account. And that seller wanted us to start there with the presentation because that's what they were most excited about.
Yeah, that's very interesting. So you start with feasibility study, doing projections.
Get a decision-making tool that allows you to actually compare apples to apples, right?
Understood. So it can be implemented at the early stage. It could be implemented at an exit stage. It could be somewhere in between. It's just more of it's a tool in a toolbox that owners of businesses could consider to incorporate into their decision tree. So
let's just be really clear about it. It is a strategic transition, right? ESOP is a strategic tool for your business. It's not just an exit plan. And that's something a lot of people through that process can recognize and benefit from. So go ahead. Sorry, you're going to say something, Mike.
Yeah. Just so where at least what I'm hearing is this just basically, like you said, strategic tool. For the companies that are looking for a potential exit. And I've seen a little different. Maybe this is for more of successful operating companies with cash flows and profits versus tech firms where they usually just give away stock options. They don't know if the company is going to be worth anything in a few years, right? Yep. So the complexity to set it up and the cost has to make sense if it's a successful growing company with a clear path forward. If it's an early stage or speculative company, it may or may not be the right solution, at least not in the initial phase. I the moment you said ESOP, I immediately thought years back when I was in the high tech, we had a version of an ESOP. And for some reason, I thought maybe it was a stock option plan. Maybe ESOP is a stock ownership plan. I just didn't remember that being qualified. I remember years ago, this was at least what was called ESOP, was a combination of options and restricted stock, versus now you're saying it can be set up as a qualified plan. Maybe it can be even both, right?
I'm not familiar with the other path with the options. They may have called it employee ownership, right? But it wasn't ESOP as it was designed under the 1974 ERISA law. So
the moment you said ERISA, it's a qualified plan. Qualified plan. You could do a lot of similar things versus restricted stock. It gets done all day long today. I mean, look at all these high tech companies. Employees get restricted stock and they get options, right? And if these are qualified options or qualified grants, there's no tax implications on the grant. Usually tax implications come in on exit, right? When the stock is sold through either public market or private transaction. On a qualified side, it's almost like revelation. It opens up a whole lot of set of possibility if it works the same way, but now you have a qualified component, which is significantly more valuable because of, over the years, it could be worth a lot more. Now, what happens when employees leave? So if somebody's part of the plan and they want to move on, I'm just curious, how does a qualified plan work? Can they roll over their money or transfer their money, or they are in that plan and the plan is not selling companies, so there's no, transferability or mobility?
Yeah, so I'm going to look at this from two different directions, if that's okay. And I want to start with key employees, right? Because, right, when you're going through this process, some of the employees are key and they can't leave. You don't want them to leave. And it's not just about employment agreements. So I want to just mention this when you're talking about stock options, is there are ways to reward those key employees outside of the ESOP, right? And that's a standard part of creating these using phantom shares or SARs, stock appreciation rights. So they get rewarded above and beyond what they would also get rewarded inside of the ESOP plan. So those are two different things. So I just want to be clear that those key employees aren't left out in the cold. Now, how do people, and those, by the way, those SARs are also tied to performance and it's tied to retention, right? So that's part of the reason you give those, right? Is you want to keep them on board. Now, what happens inside the ESOP though? How do we know what happens to those shares as people come and go, which is naturally part of a business? Now, people create ESOPs to hire and retain better people, and people do stay with ESOPs four times longer than they tend to stay with non-ESOP companies. So it is a significant change in the tenure of people in ESOP companies. What's awesome about that, though, is there is still a vesting period, right? Graduated vesting 20, 40, 60, 80 over the course of 6 years. Standard, just like a qualified retirement plan, like a 401k vesting schedule. When people leave, when you design your plan, if they're under a certain threshold, you just pay them out. If they're over a certain threshold, they get paid out over time. And the people that leave can then roll that into other qualified retirement plans like IRAs and not have to pay the tax until they're ready to.
But the difficult part in that whole exercise is valuation, right? So if it's a publicly traded plan, that's easy, right? You can value those shares all day long. If you're a private company, they own, I don't know, a million shares and somebody owns 10,000 shares, 1%, whatever you want to call it, right, of that plan. The value could have been assessed at the time of a setup. Does the plan have to revalue the shares every year?
That is part of the ESOP process, is an annual valuation, which then goes to the trustee, and the trustee sets the share price every year. Yep.
Yeah, because there's a difficulty with private company valuation. It's very subjective, and it's a new beast. It's a different beast versus public company.
Yep. Yeah, it's not just what the market values it at. It's what's the actual fair market value of the company itself as determined by the trustee's valuation firm. Yep.
So like any retirement plan, the trustee will try to establish an annual value for this, at least for the sake of this math. And if people are vested out and you give them an option to redeem or somehow or sell out, there's a process how you give them liquidity option if they leave the company.
Yes, if they leave the company, they have that option for the vested portion of their shares.
Interesting. I mean, it's similar to the other plans, right? It's similar to the traditional 401ks when people leave, especially if they are in publicly traded funds, then the value is very easy to establish.
All established under the same law. Yep.
Okay. So I appreciate this. This was very interesting. This was different. This was kind of like a revelation. There's another angle to this. It's another opportunity. Very, very different. Very powerful.
Thank you. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, how would folks reach out if they wanted to explore the possibility of you helping them out, look at their company considering an implementation of ESOP as part of their legacy or business continuation planning?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. The easiest way to do that, if you want to learn more, is to go to esopready.com, esopready.com. And while you're there, you can learn about ESOP, do some digging, get some good information about what it is, how it works, the process to become one. You can actually take an assessment to see if your business might be a fit to continue a conversation. And at the end of that assessment, if you believe it is, you can actually just schedule a time directly with me. No cost. We have a conversation, find out what your goals are, dig into it, and just kind of understand, is this something that lines up with what you're trying to accomplish? And that usually happens over several meetings where it's just a constant iterative education process.
Yeah, Matt, I appreciate that because this takes education first.
Yes.
And building trust and faith, and this is the right approach. And then obviously some technical structuring and working with CPAs and attorneys.
Part of my fun. As a former banker, I love that stuff. So,
yeah, I can tell you're very passionate about it. This is your thing, right? This is what you do. This is what you like, and you have deep expertise in the field. By the way, are there good books on this topic? Obviously, esopready.com, maybe you have it on the website. Resources such as good books folks could read to better understand how this functions.
Yeah, so the other place I would go for great information and absolutely books as well as just information is the National Center for Employee Ownership, NCEO. They are a fantastic resource. It's a nonprofit organization that's sole purpose is to advance the ideas of employee ownership. And believe it or not, we're talking about ESOP. There are a lot of other ways to accomplish employee ownership if you want to transition your company to the employees, but maybe ESOP's not the right model. I have conversations every day with people that want to talk about ESOP, and it just isn't the right fit for what they are and what they're trying to do, but they like the idea of their legacy being intact and being able to look in the mirror for what's after they accomplish what's next for their company. There's other ways to do that, and that's another great resource.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I didn't realize there's a whole industry to this. It's a nonprofit. It's almost like it's been the norm for the tech world. Almost, there's no other way folks join these companies. They expect some form of stock options or other, you know, employee ownership, at least early stage. And even successful companies even some of the largest companies in the world, like NVIDIA, they continue to grant annually stock and options to the employees. And I don't know whether they incorporate an ESOP part of the plan, but that secondary component quite often is viewed as the first component. Not the plan is the biggest value driver, but it's interesting that the ESOP plan could be that for some people or some businesses. It could be a large part of that long-term retention plan versus some of these companies that they focus sort of a short term. You don't know what's going to happen you have an AI startup. If the idea catches up, wonderful. But setting up an ESOP plan too early doesn't make sense because it's just overhead.
Well, yeah, and it really is. It's designed to be a long-term play. And let's just be honest, in a lot of those companies, they have a different set of goals. They're not looking for a long-term play. They're looking to build it up and move on to the next thing. So it's a different approach to building a business and transitioning a business. It's just a matter of, again, goals. And if you aren't sure, esopready.com, just schedule a time and let's talk.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's the suitability and the right fit is the kind of question number one. And obviously, there are many other questions. Yeah. Matt, I appreciate your wisdom. Thank you for coming on a podcast. Lots of great nuggets. And esopready.com is the website. Thank you kindly once again.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Big Mike Fund Podcast. To receive your copy of Mike's How to Choose a Smart Real Estate Fund book, head to BigMikeFund.com or visit Amazon and type Mike's slot name. Keep listening and keep investing Big Mike style. See you on the next episode.